We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
What do you think about the Laker team now?
You follow the box scores of the games every day?
Just the Lakers.
You're kidding. That is really a compliment. I was pleased to see you smile at the top of our show, because once the game starts, you have a game face. You don't smile much out there.
I don't think you have to do things for money anymore.
Correct.
What's up, Laker fans? Welcome to Laker Film Room Podcast, brought to you by the Blue Wire Podcast Network. I'm Pete, joined as always by Darius and Mike. And today we're going to talk some LA Clippers and Phoenix Suns. The LA Clippers survived tonight in unlikely circumstances with a double-digit win on the road to pull out Game 5 to bring the series to 3-2. And from a Laker fan perspective, there are, you know, complicated emotions tied up in that. Paul George goes for 30 in the second half, right? I think he's shot like just a ridiculous percentage in the second half. And this is something I've been thinking about lately in watching these playoffs, guys, is that I have two loyalties when it comes to basketball. One is to the Lakers, obviously, right? And that's my team through which I identify with and have since birth, when it comes to the sport of basketball. But my other loyalty is to the actual sport of basketball, where I can have fun at a 9-and-under game, right? Like, I can have fun at a high school game, at a JV high school game that's a Division IV type level game, where there's something just about the sport that is really attractive to me. And it's such a big part of my life that I've realized that I've developed a certain set of principles around that with respect to both being a Laker, but also the sport of basketball, right? In terms of what I believe in, how I think the game should be played. It's not to say it's right or it's wrong. It's just what I believe. And it's what's been formed over my experience with basketball over a lifetime. And so that brings me to the Clippers. And I've been trying to find a way to articulate this as well as I possibly can. I respect that team that's on the court, the team that won this game five. And I've respected that team for most of this year. If I didn't respect them, I would be cackling like a hyena when they lose, as I did last year. If you ever heard the clip of me, Anthony, and Harrison right after they lost and blew the 3-1 lead to Denver. So if I felt the Clippers were worthy of being laughed at, I have no problem doing that. But relating back to the Lakers, I don't like how we went out after AD got hurt. It's one thing to lose when you're shorthanded, when you don't have enough talent, right? It's another thing to be down by 30 at halftime, because you kind of packed it up and like, we're moving on, right? And that's exactly what the Clippers could have done in this game five. Not only is Kawhi out and it's a 3-1 series lead, they're on the road in Phoenix. Ivica Zubac, who's not a star player by any means, but had the best plus minus in the series of any player. He had been a real positive. He's ruled out with the knee injury as well. Would have been very easy, Darius, for them to be able to just say, hey, you know what? 1-2-3 Cancun. If you don't know the Cancun story, that's another time. That goes back to a Van Exel story in the late 90s. But they could have very easily checked out of that game, but they didn't. And so from my basketball loyalties, not my Lakers loyalties, but from my basketball loyalties of what I think a good basketball team is on any level, I respect them. I just want to say that.
No, I mean, the Clippers are a good basketball team. They're resilient. They're a team that I think that all three of us on this pod have shown a lot of respect for the entire season. right? And I think the thing that you're really speaking to, Pete, and Mike, I'd love to hear your thoughts on this, is that I think even dating back to last year, we all had a respect for the Clippers' talent level and sort of what their ceiling was. And I think this year, Mike, and I don't even want to say that I'm surprised by this, because I think over the last 4 to 6 months or so, whenever the Clippers have come up, like, we'll get our jokes off or whatever, right? Because it's always fun to get some jokes off now and then. But for the most part, it's been sort of like, yeah, the Clippers, they're a team that concerns, right? Like, they concern me as a Lakers fan. And the resiliency that I think that they've shown this year is somewhat new when you compare them to sort of last year's iteration. And Pete, I don't want to speak for you, but I feel like some of the that segment that you just had right now about sort of respecting them, and I would bet a lot of it relates back to that idea of they're going to show up and compete each night.
That's right.
And I think these playoffs, Mike, that has been probably the most, their biggest quality as a team, these playoffs, has been that, which is, considering how they went out last playoffs, it is quite the 180 for them. I think you've always looked at the Clippers as the team that could give them the most issues. And you were sort of not as high on Utah. You were high on Phoenix, but probably had them still slotted below the Lakers and the Clippers for sure. And so what is it that you're seeing from them? And did this Game 5 win surprise you?
So this specific game didn't surprise me. I was discussing this on Green Room. Actually, we did a little pregame thing with Golliver and our boy Larsoul jumped in. And I thought that the Clippers, as good as Zubats was the last couple of games especially, I thought his absence was going to help them and it forced them to play what their best lineup has been throughout the season, throughout the postseason. And that's the small ball group that switches at least enough to neutralize the screen roll. They did it against Utah, and Utah didn't have an answer. They did it again tonight. I thought there were some pockets where Ayton could have been more aggressive, but still, like, they don't, that's not really how they play. You know, it's, and so the style that the Clippers went to was going to be conducive to them playing well, because they have done it well in the postseason. And Phoenix was kind of got sucked into that game a little bit. And they definitely deserve credit for the way that they play hard, but Phoenix has been that team that plays that way all year too. So it's not like they caught them because they came and kind of brought their energy. I thought this was just more of a pure basketball matchup thing. And then Phoenix did get a little tight in that game. And I think we did learn something, though. Take the Clippers out of it. Like, you can't lose Game 5 at home if you're an elite playoff team. And that's the game that teams always win with that home court. And I don't think it was a surprise based on how the matchups were going to dictate the Clippers were going to be able to play a certain way that they've really had a lot of success with, and against teams that don't have a small ball buster like LeBron or like AD. Phoenix doesn't have that player. Neither did Utah, and Dallas did to an extent with Luka, but didn't have enough help.
But throughout this series, Phoenix has busted up the Clippers small ball lineup. That's why Zoo has the best plus minus of a player in the series, at least up until this game, is because he had worked quite a bit, and their small ball hadn't, because Ayton was able to beat it quite a bit. For me, this was a game that was so much about mentality. Like, look at how it started. So yes, Phoenix has been that team that's come out and played hard and given their bet, but every team is prone to letting their sense of urgency or desperation or appropriate fear drop. And so you put yourself in Phoenix's shoes, you're up 3-1, you're coming home to a crowd that loves you and that's been going nuts this whole postseason. You've only lost one game at home to the Lakers in game 2 of that first series. And you have this team, right? Like, that game 4 win going up 3-1 like that is like, all right, we got this. This isn't, which isn't to say that you do in fact have this, but there is a natural mental letdown of like, oh, and now Zubats is out. And to me, it speaks to how the game started. It was like 20-5, Mike, like right when it started, which, yes, we can argue matchups and whatnot, but when it starts like that, it's usually because one team's ready and the other team is not.
Yeah, that's definitely true. But I think that if you look at earlier in the season, the series itself, it's to me less about matchups and plus minus and Zubats. I know that's been a talking point lately. I don't think that's because, you know, they found the answer to that specific type of scheme. I think that part in its own right is that the Clippers had the Clippers got a mental boost when Chris Paul returned, even though he then didn't look like Chris Paul. And then Devin Booker breaks his nose, and he hasn't been the same since then. The way that Beverly's been able to be physical, and he's all of a sudden come on, it's been an up and down series like that for me, where I'm not just looking at the numbers and thinking like, okay, yeah, the small Aiden is the answer to attacking small ball. I just think that eventually the Clippers they're going to get to the point where they do play their best in this way. And so maybe part of that goes into the fact that they had at this point nothing to lose. Right. They could kind of play free. They could play a little easier. And Phoenix was a little tight. And that to me is what Pete started the first part of the game. But so it's weird. I'm not really disagreeing with your point there. I'm just saying that I don't know if it's I think that all of these other emotional factors come into play there, too. And
for sure,
but you're right, especially the way they started. That was more of a punch you in the mouth. And then can you respond to it? But I didn't think they could go back to some of that bread and butter stuff that had worked against the Clippers when they were in a different state in the previous game. So Darius, put this together for us or for me.
No. So I think both of y'all are right within the context of the way that this series is evolving is very much like every other Clippers playoff series has been this season, basically. Like, they were down 0-2 to the Mavs. They were down 0-2 to the Jazz, right? And they were now down 0-2 against the Suns, right? And there were circumstances in each of those series that sort of led to them looking that way. But over the course of time, I think Mike's point about the X's and O's stuff has started to shift in the Clippers' favor every single series. And some of it has been injury-related stuff. Like, I'm going to love to hear – I have some thoughts about Chris Paul's return and how that sort of, in a way, hampered the Suns in some interesting ways. Like,
they're a different team with Chris Paul than they are without him. And most – like
the campaign injury too, Pete.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah, because campaign is a different type of guard than Chris Paul is, right? Like, it's a different dynamic, different skill set. You know, high scorer can really let it fly from three. And above all else, in a lot of ways, pushing pace, I think, has been a big storyline within this series.
So let's get into the Chris Paul thing here now for a second, because one of the things, and I think that this speaks to Mike's point a little bit, Pete, about like the tactical stuff and it being like matchup stuff, is that is Chris Paul, especially with Zubats out. So in game four, I thought down the stretch, CP3 did a pretty good job of beating the switch when he got Zubats on him, right? And he did not do that in his first game back. So Chris Paul returned in game three. Zoo had to play more because Ayton was wrecking small ball, like the Clippers small ball lineups. And so Zoo was playing more. And I thought the Clippers got away with switching Zoo onto Chris Paul and Chris Paul not being able to score or do anything. And I was thinking to myself, if that holds over the course of the series, the Suns are in trouble because campaign is mostly going to eat a switch up against a big. He's very much like Schroeder in that way, except he's even got more of a deadly three-point shot, right? And so that sort of like jump cut Barry Sanders, like Dante Hall style that campaign can play, right? Where he's sort of just jitterbugging all over the court. That can really beat the switch. But Chris Paul is more deliberate and he was not beating that, right? Then in game four, I thought he had just enough success down the stretch of game four to beat the switch. So no Zoo tonight. All of those switches now are against better better equipped defenders against him. And I thought one of the things that really bothered the Suns this game was that both in the switching and against like some of the zone stuff that was clogging up the driving lanes that the Clippers were doing, that they could not get into the sort of like blender drive and kick action and pick and roll stuff where they really draw multiple defenders to a certain part of the floor before kick out and swing. And some of that I feel like is like, hey, Chris Paul, like you got to start to figure some of this stuff out. And I thought particularly he didn't do a great job of being the point god in game five.
Yeah. And I think to try and bring in the original point to this that Pete and I were discussing with the Zubat stuff, it's the offense that is really helped by him being out for the Clippers. Because when they're playing this style that they played, look at the shot quality that they get. And that's just tougher. You know, Ayton is better than Gobert in this instance, but he's no Anthony Davis, you know, like at that spot. And so they're eventually going to get an open three or some kind of decent look for Reggie Jackson or Marcus Morris or Paul George, who finally for his career has done a much better job of just attacking the paint. And he can only do that because Ayton and whoever else has got to be out in rotation running around the floor. And so that's kind of what I'm getting at. Like the last Zubats played 39 minutes in that slugfest, and that was fine because it was all slow down, you know, screen roll. He's showing on Chris Paul, and it's just like nobody can make a shot because there's no space on the floor. And this is the Clipper team that just diced up Utah after they lost the first two and won four straight. And the only and this is kind of why I was high on the Clippers all along from a talent standpoint. And the one team where they had a chance to match up with the Lakers, because the Lakers are also the only other team that can do that. They can go small. And
100%.
And this is, Pete, to your point about you just made about campaign and the difference between even like having a Chris Paul, is that the other way to beat that type of a switching defense is to have the dude that gets to the rim. And like, you just need one. And their one guy got hurt in campaign because Chris Paul's not doing that. He doesn't want to get all the way to the rim. He can once in a while, but he doesn't have that he can keep going to. And this is why I thought like Dennis Schroeder could have been a good antidote to this as well, when AD was healthy and when AD was playing aggressive or just a healthy LeBron. So these are all the reasons why, like as Darius laid out early in this pod, that early in the season, I liked Phoenix a lot, but thought there were going to be those limitations once they got to the Lakers. Same thing with the Clippers, and throw Utah into that Phoenix bag. And here we are. Now, what's going to happen for the rest of the series, we could discuss further, because I think that's certainly interesting. But I think that tonight's game made more sense maybe than the odds makers would have had.
No, that's a great way of putting it. And a lot of times you see these things coming before they actually happen. And yeah, in a lot of ways, like Phoenix is a really good team, but they're, in terms of their level of the caliber of team that they are, it only goes up to a certain point. And the teams that they faced have been missing, like Kawhi's averaging 30 some odd points on 55% from the field. Like this would be a clear Clippers win if Kawhi played in this series. But that's how it goes, right? So let's take a quick break. When we come back, I want to talk about Paul George's night.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
So I remember a series, the LeBron fans that listen to this, and maybe you guys will be able to help. 2013, I believe it was, may have been 2012 as well. But those Vogel Paul George teams with Roy Hibbert and Lance Stephenson, David West, those squads, they had a series or two against the Heatles that they eventually dropped, but they were really good series, really good playoff basketball. And within that, Paul George had a couple of runs where, and he was a much younger player at that point, where it was like, oh, does this guy have next? Is he? That's one of the fun things about the NBA is that who's the next guy to enter the superstar type of stratosphere? We all know what happened after that. He had the leg injury and the Team USA stuff. And we know his, you know, his foibles with the Clippers over the last couple of years. That dude scored 30 points in the second half of a game on the road in game five of the Western Conference Finals. And he was getting to the rim. And he was using that nasty step back dribble where he dribbles it. You know, he plants that front foot and dribbles behind his back, goes right into his pull up three. And he's an interesting case to me because he's not a superstar player in my eyes, but he's really good. And I feel like we, almost more than any other type of player, we struggle to quantify and properly discuss players that are really, really, really good, but not quite great. But tonight he was great, Darius. So I'd love to hear your thoughts on him, even in a broader perspective than just tonight's game.
Yeah, so I don't want to like toot my own horn here, but I think throughout the season, I think I've sort of been saying like, hey, Paul George, like he's still really good. Right. And so the pandemic P stuff and the way off P, like I said, like we all love to get our jokes off and that stuff can be funny. Like, great. Right. Let's make some jokes. But one of the reasons why the Clippers are looked at as a threat isn't just because they have Kawhi. It's because they also have Paul George. And Pete, the playoffs that you're talking about were the 2013 playoffs. Those Vogel-led Pacers teams faced off against those Heat teams a couple of different times in back-to-back playoffs. So they played in 2012 as well, but the Heat were clearly superior, and Paul George was not quite up to the challenge of LeBron James. The next season, he was. And then back in 2017... when George was still with the Pacers and LeBron was back with the Cavs, they had another epic duel in the first round. And Paul George had like, it was another sort of like, oh, Paul George is ready for this one. And that's sort of where the idea of Paul George being a great player was born from, right? It was that very early on in his career, he went toe to toe with LeBron James and didn't flinch. Like, he didn't come out on top, but he was able to defend and he was able to hold his own offensively in a way where you thought, oh, okay. In a league where, as Mike always says, like the 6'8", 6'9", wing player that is a do-it-all two-way guy, like George was right in the mold of that, right? And top 10 players, mm-hmm. he's right there. Like, you couldn't talk about Paul George. Like, those wing conversations, Mike, it was LeBron, it was Kawhi, and it was Durant, right? And then after that, if the next name that you heard wasn't Paul George, it was going to be right after, like, Jimmy Butler, right? Like, those were the guys. And George tonight, I think, showed that he can still be that dude. It's interesting though that these performances I feel like have been so much more consistent without Kawhi, and I don't know what that says about. Yeah, and I don't know what that says about Paul George in terms of
mentality
or focus or what it is about that. Mike, maybe you have some thoughts about that, but ever since Kawhi went down, I feel like George has raised his game another level and has sort of been like, look, all right, like we ain't got Kawhi, well, I'm just going to go get us 30, right? And, you know, maybe double-digit rebounds, like 6-7 assists. Like, I'm just going to be that do-it-all dude. And in a win-or-go-home situation, he was amazing. Like, if you put this stat line on LeBron James or on Kevin Durant or on a player that people like, right? They're going to be fawning over this stat line. Dude missed like four shots in the second half. He basically played, right? Like, he was amazing.
So this is where, but this is the whole thing with Paul George, and he's the reason, because everybody already assumes what Kawhi was and kind of gives him credit and everything when they join forces. But George is the reason why I think the three of us, but have always had the Clippers up there from a talent standpoint, because Paul George is unimpeachable from a talent standpoint. He can defend multiple positions. He's huge. He's got a feathery touch. He can get to the rim when he wants to. He can hit free throws in general. I'm gonna get to that.
Handle the ball at his size. Guys that can dribble as well as he can at that size are not that common.
You know, what he's not as good at, though, and this is why I think this is the reason why he's been better in this role than what he is with Kawhi, is he's not a great creator. He's not a great – like, it's not that he can't pass, but that's not instinctual to him. Like, look at tonight's game, for example. 6 assists, 6 turnovers. You know, that's, you do not see that very often from LeBron or from Chris Paul or from Luka even. You know, Luka will get turnovers in other ways, but he's always going to have many more assists. And that's been relatively consistent throughout. Like, he had 8 assists in game 3. He had 6 turnovers. So that's the one side where that player has always been there. Where George has fallen short has been on some of the mental sides of the game. It's the not recognizing the must win of last season, right? In the comments after the breakdown, it's just the general way that he seems to perceive things and then say stuff that bleeds onto the court about his style of play. That's the element I think that's been missing from him compared to some of those true elite superstars. But he's got the superstar talent and he's put it out there from time to time. But guess what happened, guys, in game 4? He was 5 for 20. And I get it was a rock fight for everybody, but he was 5 for 20 from the field, and he missed 2 free throws in the final minute. Like, that's – so he, to me, this game was a no-pressure game, right? They were supposed to lose, and he came in, and he balled. And that's not, again, to take credit away from him in other situations, but he has not been great in other pressure situations in the last couple of years. And I think, again, part of that is because he and Kawhi – both are similar, and they're really talented. They have all kinds of skills, but they're not great creators for the other. And so when it's just one of them and the other one isn't there to take half the shots, then the other one could get, like Kawhi could have done the same thing, get into a big rhythm, get 45 points, have 6 assists and 6 turnovers, and also play good defense. So that to me is where they still ultimately fall short compared to where LeBron and AD can play off each other so well.
No, I think the mental aspects of the game are super important. And in many ways with Paul George, what keeps him from getting to that level, one thing I notice with him is he gets flustered. Like, he can get flustered into whether it's the infamous off the corner of the backboard shot, or I forget which game it was. I believe it was in Phoenix, and it might have been that game too that ended in the tip and dunk by Ayton as the game winner. But as they were trying to come back, he made this inbounds pass to, I think it was Zoo was in the game. Whoever it was, like, had no expectation that the ball was going to be inbounded
to
them.
That was late in game 2. Yep.
Right. Late in game 2.
It was Zubats. It was Zoo, like, running up the court the other way, and he kind of just nonchalantly just, like, threw it out, and it ended up going out of bounds off of Phoenix somewhere.
And there are some times where you inbound it to your big just so they can give it back to the ball handler and come up court. But that wasn't that, right? Like, Zoo was running up court. He wasn't expecting the pass. And the pass wasn't even right at Zoo. It was in kind of his general direction. And I was just like, what is he doing? Like, what was he going for and trying to? And it ended up being Clippers ball after review in the scramble to get it and whatnot. But I thought it was indicative of those moments where, and we've seen this with our players, why that's part of the mental aspect of basketball is the pressure and the speed of it. Guys can get in their heads and can start when you feel pressure, Darius, in any aspect of life, your decision-making can really start to degrade in ways that does not show up in other places. So I think Mike makes a good point in that this was kind of a carefree game for them. And there's no, like, you go out there and you play hard and you lose, you hang your head up high. Nobody's laughing at Pandemic P, right? But he went out there under those circumstances and balled out, like you said.
I mean, Paul George is going to catch strays regardless.
Of course.
So, it's on the lower end of that spectrum.
Yeah.
Well, to be fair,
Derek, can I interject one thing, though? The reason why he catches strays is because of all those things that have happened in the past. Yes. Like that. That's all. Those are connected.
What I would say, too, and maybe this only amplifies Mike's point even more, is that without Kawhi in general, this team is not expected to win. Right. So there's a certain amount of freedom that Paul George can play with now anyway. Right. And whether like maybe game five is a microcosm of that idea even more. Right. Like, oh, no one expects us to win. We're without Kawhi. There's no Zubats. Like we're on the road. Right. But in general, I think that that idea of playing loose and free matters. I think it was. It might have been Charles Barkley who made a similar point in one of the playoff series before. And I think he made it about the Clippers, actually, when they were going back to LA for game six against the Jazz. And it was a closeout game. And Barkley was making the same point that sort of Mike had just made about, well, game five was the game where there was no pressure, right? They're on the road. They weren't expected to win. There's no Kawhi, right? It's like, go out there, just play free. If you win, you win. Like, if you lose, you weren't supposed to win anyway. And so what do you think about game six?
Like, couldn't that have described us too? Like, those were our circumstances too. In game six, for example, of the Lakers. Sorry, I don't mean to hijack that, but like, it can go different ways. The other way that that can go is like, well, we're not expected to win, and I can't wait to have some time off.
No, that's totally true. I will say this about the Lakers. And so I run a website. I have not written about the Lakers' sort of demise. And it's because every single time I've sat down to write, a bunch of different times, but every single time I've sat down, I just haven't put anything coherent together. I have so many different thoughts, but one of the thoughts I have is the thought that relates to the point that you just made, Pete. And it's the idea that the entire year, the Lakers were building towards this idea of, can we just get through the season? Can we just get our guys healthy? Can we just get to that point. And it finally looked like they were turning a corner in that, right? After months and months of no AD and then no LeBron and then LeBron's back, AD's not. Oh, we got Drummond. Well, Drummond's out. And so, they're back. They're kind of not.
Dennis is in health and safety protocols. Yeah.
Everything that you just mentioned. They're up 2-1. And then Anthony Davis gets hurt again. And we talked about it on the pod about like how deflating that was. But as I've gotten further and further away from the Lakers series, my sense was, Pete, is in relation to the point that to the question that you just asked, is that couldn't that have been the Lakers? I think it could have been the Lakers if everything wasn't built towards this idea of once we're healthy.
I was always talking about the importance of the present tense.
Yes.
And accomplishing something in today, even if it's like, yeah, game 22 of our back-to-back season where we definitely need to, but I was always bothered by that, exactly that concept, Mike, is that like, just wait for us to get healthy and then things will be all right. And in a lot of ways, it was still true. right?
Yes.
It was still true.
It's not ideal, but if the talent is overwhelming, it is true. So from a coaching perspective, which is where you come from, where Darius comes from, it's not great. You know, like, it's not what you want. It is the opposite of what Frank Vogel wanted to plan for. But, you know, could they have still won had AD not tweaked the groin? Yes, but of course it was far from ideal.
So what's the difference between a team that wins in that circumstance and a team that doesn't? Is that if you do that work that's too reductive. That's to say that they didn't do work, right? But I felt like our mindset was so in that future tense that we didn't value today. The whole idea of chop wood, carry water is to do the very simple, basic things that bring and sustain life in the present tense. And then that builds something bigger.
Pete, I would argue, though, that this group did do that work. Is they were ramping up. Like that East Coast road trip when they were freaking playing hard and they were getting after it, and Keith was stepping up, and all of these guys on any given night were sort of just like we're gonna do it and we're gonna play hard and we're gonna play for each other. I think though that at some point it did switch within the guys on the team, and it was sort of just like, once we get everyone back, that's when it's going to be go time. And we started to see the seeds of that, I feel like, early in that Sun series. And then when it all went away with AD getting hurt again, it was sort of like, it was the ultimate, everyone's played Jenga, right? Like, it was the ultimate, you pulled out the one piece and then it all fell.
Mm-hmm. I wanted to make one point, bringing Paul George back into the situation and just kind of what we saw from the game tonight, and then we can connect the Lakers or not to it. But so he was 15 for 20 in game 5, just hitting everything. Up to that point in the series, guys, game 1 through 4, we just talked about, you know, the rhythm that he was in, et cetera. Well, he was only shooting 35%. Like, that's really low. Here's the thing, though. He took a minimum of 20 shots in each of those games. So he's forced into – and that's the thing where he sometimes can slip a little bit when Kawhi's there. He's forced to be aggressive. And a lot of those shots are coming, especially tonight, and I think this is, again, part of the difference of them going small, is that he had more opportunities at the rim where he was single covered, and he had more opportunities on the perimeter where he was single covered because they couldn't stack the defense to one side, you know, because Zubats wasn't in there just taking up space or bringing his guy up for a screen. So it's not a critique of him, and he gets his credit for tonight, but his playing as that lead guy, you got to be shooting better than 35% typically to win a playoff series. And that's why they were down 3-1, at least to some extent. So what I'm really curious about now is game 6, game 7, what's the counter to this? How does George play if the pressure comes back to the Clippers in game 6? Can Chris Paul figure something out? Can campaign suddenly get a little healthier? So and maybe I just did that to distract myself from, again, going down the injury hell routes of thinking about the Lakers, and just, again, use my favorite term of bubble tax.
Yes. So I think the point with PG shooting 35% in this series and all of what you said there is that he's not quite a number one caliber guy in a conference finals type of scenario. That's okay. There's a lot of very good players in this league that aren't quite that guy. That group is very select. Part of his shooting percentage is mitigated by the fact that he's gotten to the line a lot. He's done a wonderful job of using his physicality, but your point is taken, right? He's missed some huge free throws. You can have a great game and then miss two free throws at the wrong time. And in a lot of ways, that's what determines the game. But I think ultimately, he has acquitted himself well in terms of how hard he's played, how he's competed. And while it's still flashing some of those, like, who the hell are you inbounding the ball to? Or you just missed two free throws that it was clear that you were rattled afterward. Right. And so that's the thing that's interesting about basketball to me. One of the many things is that all of those things are true. But I just wanted to properly give him his flowers on what I thought was a really remarkable performance tonight.
The last thing I was going to say is that there's a lot of redemptive stories that I feel like that are going to play out over these last couple of games that Mike just alluded to, right? Like, I think the idea of what can Paul George do when the pressure starts to ramp up, because the pressure is going to shift, Mike. And at some point it is going to be, well, yeah, if we win this game, then it's game 7. Or, oh, well, we won this game, so now it is a game seven.
That would be some incredible poetry too, right? The Clippers coming back from a 3-1 deficit would be quite the, considering how last season ended.
That's the question is, can they Jedi mind trick themselves into the, oh no, you know, we're coming from behind right now. This is, and
does
Phoenix
so.
Keep the pressure, right? Or does any of it revert to, because that obviously played out for Denver last year.
Yeah, my guess is they close it out in six, Phoenix does. But I'm curious, where are you at on that, D?
No, I'm very interested to see what's up with Chris Paul. And you know, we didn't get into it a lot in this pod, and I guess we'll see what happens in game six, because as long as the Suns season continues, I'll be very interested to see sort of Chris Paul's fingerprints are so much on this Suns team, but they lost a little bit of their verve when he came back. And with campaign getting injured the way that he did, and there is a deliberate the Suns are so deliberate now with Chris Paul back in the mix, and a part of me feels like that is playing into the hand some of what the Clippers want them to be, and so all of those redemptive stories when you talk about giving Paul George's flowers. I think that those are totally on point for how he played in game five. But looking forward, I'm very much interested in seeing which one of these guys between sort of two sort of tortured souls now, right? Chris Paul for much longer, but Paul George has some ghosts there too that he needs to exercise a little bit. And there's probably no player left in the league more than Chris Paul who has more ghosts than him. So that's the sort of thing that I'm looking forward to in game six and then potentially game seven.
I'll just piggyback on the Chris Paul point for my final thought here. Guys, Chris Paul in the series before against what was clearly a depleted Denver team, but nonetheless shot 62% from the field, right? Like the assisted turnover was insane. He had five turnovers for the whole series, 26 points. Like that was Chris Paul in his peak rhythm. Then health and safety protocols. And he didn't play a game of basketball for 11 days up until game three. And now against the Clippers in three games, 31% from the field, you know, 18 points. He's already turned the ball over eight times in three games. So he's not himself. And I always try to say when we're thinking about Dennis Schroeder, and he came back, and he wasn't himself. And whether it's just the sheer fact of being out 11 days when all these other dudes are in full peak playoff conditioning, that's enough in its own right, whether you were sick or not throughout that spot. And the same thing happened when Anthony Davis returned. LeBron is a different human being, a different species, so it's hard to quantify stuff like that with him because he just finds a way to be awesome, even if he's not healthy.
He wasn't what he was normally capable of being either, right?
He wasn't quite there, but he was.
Right. No, he can approximate it better than most, but this season's been ravaged. That's the thing. Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
No, but that's my last. That's the thing to kick to you on this, to kick to you, Pete, is because can two more days really make a difference? Can four more days, if it has to be to game seven, really make a difference? Schroeder was starting to ramp up again. Like when he, so I do think that Chris will get better. And even if it's just a little bit, the whole key, though, is going to be that the start of the game. Look at how they started game four. That was all Phoenix. Game five was all Clippers. So if it seesaws back, Phoenix should win the game. I just the thing that I would worry about if I were a Suns fan was this. My initial point about the small ball thing. And Pete, you made a good point against that. And Phoenix, just like Anthony Davis did in game two, if they play with enough force, they should be able to overcome that. But that's the thing that I would think about if I were the Suns.
No, I think on the court, that's the biggest storyline going forward is can they play small? Because Zoo's injury, hopefully he plays in game six, but there's no guarantee of that. So anyway, very interesting game that I think plays into a lot of concepts that were in play for the Lakers this year. And it's always fascinating when a rival or an enemy or however you look at basketball performs well, and you know, how do you feel about that? How do you react to that? So for tonight, credit to the Clippers team for that showed up tonight and won game five. All right, we'll be back tomorrow, talk some Lakers, but until then, you've been listening to Laker Film Room Podcast. Catch you guys next time.
Baines has got it in low to McHale. McHale wants to turn, he's double team. Just pass out of front, broken up by Worthy. Tip to Magic. Worthy dies on his belly. Magic scores.
There's Magic, got it. Magic fires. It's good. And the Lakers win the game. The Lakers win the game. Rebound to Lonnie. 3 seconds left. Van Exel to win it. It's on the way. Good.
Kobe Bryant, 48 points, 16 rebounds. Shaq with his eighth block shot that ties an NBA Finals record.
A lot of Laker fans sticking around for this.
You're seeing something that's very rare indeed. A Laker to get MVP chance
right, in Boston.
In Boston.
Of all places.
Are you kidding me?
Kobe, hard to believe.
Are you kidding me? Unreal. Are you kidding me?
Lakers looking to push. Bryant spinning in the lane. Back for Gasol. Ready pass. And it's back to a three-point game.
Kobe Bryant picked up by Bell.
There's the move. Two, one. Miss it.
Bryant. Unbelievable. For the victory. It's over.
Shot clock now to five. Bryant. Yes! And that was a little tap to Alvin Gentry.
Bad insult to injury, Kobe. I mean, what a shot. I mean, you can't defend that. Are you kidding me?
2.1 seconds remaining. Denver a foul to give. Jokic trying to disrupt Rondo. He puts it in. Here's Davis, 4-3 in the win. Oh, it's good! Anthony Davis has won it for the Lakers! James again. Oh, he hits another one. LeBron James putting together a closing quarter against the Nuggets.
This historic 2020 NBA championship belongs to the Los Angeles Lakers. The Lakers conquer the bubble, and banner number 17 will soon hang in the rafters.